Hey, everybody, this is Dominique. Are you ready to do more with your life and money? Today, we will continue this best of frequently asked financial questions from a website that gets over 30 million views per month. And who knows, we might get to your burning question. So stay tuned for part two.
Are you tired of feeling like there's more to life that you're just not experiencing? Are you unmotivated by keeping up with the status quo? Are you ready to start living intentionally with your finances and creating the life you want? Get ready for Experiencing Financial Contentment with Dominique Henderson, a podcast focused on helping you create margin for the life you want to live by putting your money where your heart is. Each week, Dominique will help you explore the decisions you make around money so that you can achieve better results. Now, here's your host, Dominique Henderson.
All right, we're back. This is Dominique Henderson, owner and founder of DJH Capital Management, where we are helping our clients to achieve their ideal financial outcome, and host of this podcast. I am so tongue-tied today. Host of this podcast, Experiencing Financial Contentment, where we want to help you do more with your life and money around the themes of financial literacy, economic empowerment, and personal development. So for all my repeat listeners and watchers, I thank you. Love you out there. Much love for you. For all our new people, make sure you're following us below on YouTube and Facebook and social media. We're all over the place, Instagram. But we're going to help you today take that pill, red pill, to leave the matrix of the average so that you can live a life of financial contentment. So what we're doing today is we're going into part two, and we're going to talk about more of these questions that came in to me from my affiliation with Investopedia Advisor Insights. So just a quick recap, I do, as many advisors in the U.S. do, participate with Investopedia to offer some insight for questions that come into their question bank. And they get over 30 million unique views a month. So I've had a lot of purview, a lot of eyes on some of the questions, or I'm sorry, some of the answers that I've provided to questions. And so what I thought I'd do be good to just kind of go through that. And maybe you have some of those questions in your particular situation. And if you want to talk about this further or offline, you can always send me an email or give us a call, 214-699-7599, or hit us up in the Facebook group, which we'll talk about at the end of the show. So let's dig right in, and we're going to bring over the screens. I had some technical difficulties last show, and hopefully this won't persist. Thought I fixed my problem, so we'll see. Let's get into some of the questions that are... All right, let's do this one more time. So we finished up on... are high yield bonds a good, or this is where we're starting today, are high yield bonds a good investment? And so I like this question because I used to be a bond guy. I ran a bond desk for almost 6 years, and we did a lot of trading on that desk, and it was a very institutional nature as far as how we faced other institutions. And but we obviously had clients that we were placing these bonds in their portfolios, in their investment portfolios, and managing it and that whatnot. So are high yield bonds a good investment? Let's back up a little bit before I answer this question, because I want to give my disclaimer. This is not investment advice. This is not financial advice. This is just us talking. You know, we're just kind of having some chat, fireside chat. And if you need investment advice or financial advice, what you need to do is you need to go talk to a financial advisor like myself or somebody you trust that you can sit down and look at your entire plan in the context of what you're trying to do. You don't want to go applying bits and pieces of advice from different sources, because that'll mess you up really good. So that's my disclaimer. All right, now we're back to the show. Are high yield bonds a good investment? Now, I say that cheap assets are good investments. How about that? cheap assets are always good investments, whether it's a bond, real estate, equity, whatever. So how do you define cheap, right? And in the context of this question, I'm not going to hedge too much, but that was just, I'm trying to be a smart aleck. I don't know if I'd successfully pulled that off. You'll have to let me know. But anyways, let's talk about high yield bonds, what they are, and what you would compare those to in order to recognize whether or not they're cheap. Maybe that helps. Okay. So bonds are a legal contract between the borrower and the lender in a transaction. And all that bond or that legal contract does is it protects really both parties, but mostly the lender of those funds and the borrower in different aspects. And we want to go through all that. But basically, a bond, I buy a bond, which is essentially me loaning money to somebody. Whoever issued the bond, they're essentially borrowing funds from me. When I buy that bond that they've issued, it will give me some type of cash flow, usually called a coupon payment, every six months or every year. So that's how bonds work in general. So let's say I had a bond maybe we can write this out. Let's see if my deal goes, if it works today. Okay, so let me get my pen going. A little trusty whiteboard pen. Okay, so let's say a bond for $1,000. That's a pretty common 1,000 par value. I'm throwing a lot of terms out, some of which you're going to have to go look up because I can't go through all this today. Otherwise, the podcast would be an hour long. So this bond of $1,000, I buy, and it pays me a 6% interest rate, which none do right now, but let's just say it does. What that means is every coupon payment period, let's say it's every 6 months. So that's zero, that's six, that's 12. What I'm going to get is I'm going to have an outflow of $1,000 for that bond, and I'm going to get a $60 payment on month six, and then another $60 payment on month 12. And let's just say that this bond matures in a year. And so what I get in addition to my $60 coupon payment is $1,000 at the end. I get my money back, right? So because it's a loan. So that is a 6% return. And if you do the yield, it's a little bit more. But anyways, the point is that's how a bond works. Now, high yield bond is when you start to bifurcate what is, let's call, a good credit and what is a bad credit. Right. And then you have in between, which is like medium and mediocre. But good credits would be things that are rated A, probably triple A. Right. And then bad credits would be probably anything. Well, I'm going to tell you, anything that is rated below. And we're using the S&P, not the Moody's, but we're using the S&P ratings right now. Anything below triple B minus. Right. Then you start to get in what is called junk. All right. So junk bonds are high yield bonds. OK, so hopefully all that's clear. I needed another whiteboard. All right. So junk bonds are high yield bonds. Now, typically speaking, the good bonds are going to return, you know, interest rates or yields, you know, and your return on investment is going to be lower than it is going to be in a stock. Right. So you have bonds, then you have stocks, and stocks return more than bonds. All right. So this may return you something like 3% and stocks may return you something like 8, right? So the difference between those is called the equity premium. And I'm writing sloppy. I'm trying to go fast so we can get it to more questions, right? So the equity premium in this case is 5%. Okay. So when you buy a high yield bond, you are essentially wanting to capture something above the normal risk-free premium, which is this 3%, you're wanting to capture like around this 5%, you know, because otherwise you just buy a stock, right? Now, bonds do have some other features, obviously, you know, the loan capability and things like that. But, you know, long story short, if you buy a bond, a junk bond, the probability that person is going to pay you back your loan at the end, your principal payment at the end, is lower than if you got a bond that paid a lower percent. So low percent, high probability of paying back, higher percent, of return, the lower the probability. And some high yield bonds have returned, let's say, upwards of 8% or so. And so what I want to do now is kind of show you. So hopefully that all makes sense. What I'm going to show you now, if we can navigate this, is show you my screen on high yield bonds. What we got to do is move this over here. Give me just a second. I want this to be informative for you. And you can go to a website like this. This is the Federal Reserve website, and you can, you know, you can open up a free account and you can just see what's going on there. It's very interesting. I use this all the time to do my economic updates. Okay. So this is a chart that you should be able to see. And I apologize if it's a little small, but what I have here is the return on high yield bonds, the difference, that spread that we talked about of 5%, the difference between what stocks return and bonds return. This is very similar here. This is a spread that shows you the difference between those risk, less risk bonds and the high risk bonds. And so the bigger the spread, the wider the spread, the more you're getting compensated for holding high yield bonds versus, let's say, stocks, because stocks would be an alternative based on what we just talked about earlier. And you can see from 2013, and so this is the last 5 years, from 2013 and 2018, how this has kind of moved along. So really one of the best times to own in the last 5 years, at least, were when spreads between the AAA bonds and high yield bonds was the highest, right? So at this point, you probably would have thought about maybe, do I own stocks or do I own some bonds, right? Because you could get a lot of extra premium by holding those bonds. But down here, you can see towards the beginning of 2017, those spreads compressed. They got really, really narrow, meaning that it's not as attractive to hold high yield bonds as opposed to stocks. You might as well gonna get the most bang for your buck with the stocks versus the bonds. So this is how you kind of compare whether or not, going back to the original question, how you can compare whether or not bonds are a good investment. You first have to say, is it cheap relative to what I could be investing in? And in the case of high yield bonds, it's going to be relative to stocks. And so the wider the spread, the more likely you would invest in bonds versus stocks in the portfolio. Otherwise, it just makes sense to hold stocks and then just go get some risk, bonds with less risk, like AAA investment grade bonds or what they are called, right? And then you can just compare this. It depends on your investment horizon, right? So this is 10 years, right? So this is the crisis, and look how big or wide spreads were in the crisis. So relative to stocks in the 2008-2009 economic crisis, the recession, you probably wanted to hold bonds. People didn't want to hold anything but cash back then, but this is, the charts are showing you what you should have done. So all of that to say, that's how that works. Okay, so let's get back to another question. Is that our last question? Okay, yeah, that was our last question. No, I'm sorry. I got one more. Maybe I don't have it up here, which I should, but those were from last episode. Okay. Technology, man, what can you say? You just got to work with it, right? Just go with the flow. Just keep it all calm, right? So, wow. We're just going through all my other questions. Let's just get back to it. Okay. Where should I invest a large sum of money? All right. So large sums of money, windfalls, sudden wealth, things like that, or even tax returns, big, large tax returns, right? Relative to how much you earn a year, a tax return could be a pretty large sum of money. So what should you do with that? I think, so let's draw some more. Why not? We're on a roll, right? So let's get our whiteboard out, and this will be the last. And then what we'll do on the next episode, I promise, the next episode, what we will do is we will start looking at some situations, because I know that's what you probably are tuning in for. Unless you just like to see me draw and whatnot, that could be a factor also. Okay. So let's move that over like that. Okay, so I think the way I would think about this, if I was getting sudden wealth, or what I would tell a client rather, so think about this in a pyramid, right? And so we're going to go from most important to least important. And when I say importance, I mean just the level of priority at which you would do these. All these are important because they're going to be part of your financial plan, but you have to do something first, second, third, and then last, right? So the most important thing I would do, let's give a scenario here. I'll give you a little scenario. So let's say you're making $75,000 a year. Let's say that's household income. Let's say you have $25,000 in debt, and I'm just making these numbers up off the cuff. And let's just say your investments are, $50,000, okay? And that's just investments. It could be in retirement or non-retirement. So what would I do in scenario? Let's say you got a windfall of let's make it a real windfall. Let's make it $100,000, right? Maybe somebody passed away and you got a life insurance policy, okay? So what would I do here if that situation is this way? So in this situation, you earn $75,000 a year. You got $25,000 in debt. Let's just say you have really nothing in your checking account. Maybe it's like $5,000 or something like that. And then you have investments, maybe like a 401k, okay? Let's put 401k out to the side here, okay? All right, so what should you do? I think this is what I would advise a client to do. If this situation was presented to me as a financial advisor, this is what I would tell a client to do. I strongly believe in emergency funds, right? So you never know when Murphy's going to come knock or something happens. So the very first layer would be emergency funds. And that needs to be 3 to 6 months, if not more, of your living expenses, right? So let's say of the 75, you're living on $5,000 a month. That means your emergency fund in this particular case would be $15,000 at least, right? So $5,000 times three, or up to 30, right? That gives you a good, a good healthy emergency fund, right? So that would be the first, part of that money. Let's just go with the bigger amount and say it was 30 that they want to do. They want to be really conservative. All right. So then the next thing I would do is I would be debt free, right? So if I had to pay off debts, I would do that next. And so that would be everything. I write a check for that, right? So 25 is gone. And now I am down to $45,000 left of my windfall. Okay. So then where do I go next, right? So the very first thing you could do is, if you're working, which this person is, I would go for a tax-free investment account. So we're in the realm of tax-advantaged, which means either tax-free or tax-deferred. So something that you could do, let's say your company offers a health savings account. And all you have to do is have the high deductible health plan. You could use some of this extra cushion that you have of $45,000 to make the full contribution, which for 2018 is, I believe, $6,900 for a family, and probably half of that or so for a single, maybe. Double check those numbers. Just go to irs.gov. But that's what I would do, because what happens with the health savings account? It means that you get to put money in there. Usually you can put pre-tax money in there, but in this case, you're not using your pre-tax salary deferrals, right? But you can still make the deduction because you're working. So, you would put the full deduction in there, and on your tax return, as a pre-tax, contribution, you can record what you put in here. So that would be, to me, that's the best bang for your buck, because you're going to get the above the line deduction, and you're also going to get the tax-free growth of the HSA. And so that's probably about the only account that you can do that with. You can also do the similar thing with an IRA, with the pre-tax deduction, maybe depending on your income. But the only thing about that is that grows tax deferred versus tax free. So then the next thing would be tax deferred, right? In order of priority, We're talking about tax deferred. So that would be like the IRA. So let me just write out here as if you can read this because it's so sloppy. Then you got the IRA there. And then on top of that would be things like taxable accounts, right? And if I had to choose, I would go Roth first, then brokerage, right? Because if you're eligible for the Roth, that grows tax-free and you don't have to have RMDs, required minimum distributions at 70 and a half, age 70 and a half. And then the brokerage is going to be taxed every year that it earns income. And when you sell out of that account and you have capital gains, you'll have to pay taxes on that. So that's the order or the waterfall that you should do. Although this is a pyramid going up, waterfalls go down. But anyways, you get my point. So you go emergency fund first, then you go for your debt free stuff, then you go for your tax free stuff, then you go for your tax deferred stuff, then you go for your taxable stuff, right? So that's what happens if you get a large sum of money as far as what I would advise you to do. So we are done wrapping up another episode. And like I promised, we are going to get into scenarios. I'll do maybe one or two more on the next episode. And that will wind up this series of best of frequently asked questions. It's financial in nature because this is what the public wants to know, right? You have to let me know if this is what you want to know because otherwise I don't know, right? Anyways, if you want to carry this on later, maybe you want and are on Facebook and you're looking for a good group to be in. Creating Your Roadmap to Financial Contentment is the group to be in. This is a group that I'm in there answering questions, having dialogue, trying to motivate you to live your best life with your money and your time and your personal development and your economic empowerment and financial literacy topics, all types of stuff we talk about there. It's really cool. So join that. And I thank you for listening. I thank you for watching. Have a great and prosperous day. Take care. Bye-bye.